means.
I know, because we have an extra special person here.
I know. Ladies and gentlemen.
Boys and girls.
Guess who is in the house tonight?
No, really, guess. Nope.
Uh-uh.
Guess again.
Oh, well, you know it's on the podcast label.
I feel like they're going to be really disappointed.
Oh, no. Friends, our dearest soul sister, Maddie Corman, is in the house. If you have been following either Natalie or I's Instagram, our social media, you know that we are in the middle of a rehearsal process for a play called Accidentally Brave, written and starring Maddie Corman.
Yes. And Maddie Corman is not only a soul sister and a very good friend to us, and more recently for me, I've gotten to know Maddie in the last little while, particularly doing this project. She's been a friend of Kristen's much longer, but we were literally, for the project, looking through Maddie's demo reel for footage, and it's like, it's just Maddie with famous people all day, but Maddie is so humble, she'll never say how cool she is, so let us tell you, this woman is so cool.
If you see Maddie Corman's face, you're like, oh, I've seen her in so
everything.
Many things. And then once you see her face and you're aware of her, as you watch things, she's everywhere.
A lot of people just think they went to camp with me.
Sure.
And some people did. But, you know, I do have one of those faces, and I've been working for a very long time. So it seems like I've done a lot, but it's just been over a long period
of
time.
Well, one of my favorite credits of yours, and probably the very first place I ever saw you long before I met you, was as the little sister, Eric Stoltz's little sister.
Yes. Some Kind of Wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, I remember seeing that as a little girl, and I was like, I just want to be Mary Stuart Masterson.
Oh, me too. And I was in it.
And you were 14 in that movie? 15?
No, I was 16. I was 16 turning 17. I turned 17, actually, on set. It was a very bittersweet birthday, actually, just to jump right in.
Yeah.
My mother had died in real life 2 weeks before I got the movie. I had already auditioned, and I actually told my mother in the hospital that I got the movie just because I wanted to tell her something nice. But then I forgot about it because there was trauma and sadness. And then a couple of weeks later, they were like, oh, you did. You got the movie. So I went out to L.A. I lived in New York, and I went out to L.A. to do this movie, and it was heaven. I mean, it was so – it was like the perfect escape. John Hughes was a very big deal then, and everybody else in the movie was – older, because I was playing the little sister, so I was the only one. I mean, they weren't old, but they were older than I, and I was still in high school. So to be in high school in 1987 and be doing a John Hughes movie was the dream, but I was also living my worst nightmare, which was my mom had just died from cancer. So it was a very bizarre time, and my first birthday without my mom was really never going to be great. But it was also kind of amazing because I was in San Pedro filming. It's a scene where my dad in the movie knocks on the window of my high school classroom and I scream. And, you know, I got to be on set and have a cake and have Mary Stuart Masterson and Eric Stoltz sing Happy Birthday. So it was a great day and a really sad night. But Mary Stuart, even though we didn't have a lot of scenes together, maybe any scenes together, we did have a great rehearsal period, and I fell madly in love with her. I mean, she was the big sister I wish I had had, and Eric was the big brother, but I also had a big crush on him, so I guess that's weird. So, yes. So it was great, and they did kind of become my, like, I think at camp, which I didn't really go to camp, even though people think I did, I think there's always the older kids who kind of take one of the younger kids under their wing, and Eric and Mary Stuart kind of did that for me, so.
Well, it was really interesting when we were looking for clips to pull of you for the show we're working on,
yeah. And
we were looking at your work, it was like, oh, well, here's the scene with Diane Keaton, and then here's Harrison Ford, mm-hmm. and here's Sarah Jessica Parker, and here's Larry David, and it just went on. It's like everything that we watch, all the way up to Lena Dunham, every scene was star-filled, and what we, Natalie and I, looked at each other, we're like, Maddie never talks about this. It's like, we know that you have been this incredible working actress your whole life, but you never brag about this incredible career you've had that spans film, television, Broadway, I mean, you really have done it all. And it's so exciting that now you have written a show.
That I have never done before.
You're a playwright. We keep looking at each other in rehearsal. And Maddie goes, well, I wonder what the playwright's going to think about this choice.
Yes. The playwright has to deal with this crazy actress. Yeah, I keep saying, as a playwright, I need to go get my eyelash extensions immediately. Yeah, that's a really brand new role for me. Much more comfortable and semi-confident as an actor than as a playwright. But I knew for this particular piece, for this particular subject, even though I'm insecure as a playwright, I was and am secure in the fact that there's nobody else who can really tell this story, that it was my story to tell.
Yeah.
And I didn't want anybody else to write it, so I did it first.
Well, and just a small background, you and I have known each other almost 10 years now.
That's crazy.
I know, so crazy. I first worked with Maddie's daughter. She was an actress in a show that I did, and then I fell so in love with Maddie, I cast her in two films, and she just became my good luck charm. I didn't want to do anything without her.
It doesn't usually happen to stage moms, so don't try to get into the door that way.
You know, an interesting thing about this specific conversation we're having, the two things that come up for me is how to take your broken heart and turn it into art, and how do you take the most vulnerable thing that's going on into your life and explore it artistically. So maybe I'll just pass it on to you, and you can tell our listeners about the process.
Well, the process was, it's interesting because my life is the process is my life, and something really terrible happened and really painful, and it's interesting that I think I'm fascinating right now, but it's interesting that I started by bringing up my mother, which is also not something I bring up all the time, but when my mom died and I was 16, there was something almost embarrassing about it. I mean, my mother didn't do anything wrong. She just got cancer and died. But it felt so like it was too much to talk about and that I should be over it. So I kind of put it away. And it was many years later that I read a book called Motherless Daughters. And it almost gave me permission to say, this is a part of who I am. I have a deep loss. And it doesn't make me bad, and it doesn't make me broken. It just makes me it's part of who I am. And to keep denying that it's a big part of who I am isn't serving me or anyone else, actually. So that kind of became a part of my life. I wasn't anticipating having another terrible thing happen. And when it did, not to be too vague, but my husband got arrested a few years ago and my whole life just exploded, imploded. It was horrible. And I wasn't like, oh, you know what? I'll write a play about this at all. I just was trying to get through the day, the week, the year. But as the dust began to settle, it certainly wasn't fully settled, I felt a desire to share the story because I knew how helpful it had been both early on in my life and at present when other people shared their pain with me. But I didn't know how I was going to do it or exactly what form it was going to take. And the fact that you mentioned how much I worked and have worked in my life is very nice and very true. But I also want to let you know that I've worked with a lot of directors and a lot of writers, and honestly, it just came to me very, very clearly that I wanted to write and that I needed to reach out to you, Kristen. Like I said, I've worked with a lot of people. I have a lot of dear friends who are wonderful directors and amazing writers. But there was something about knowing you and knowing that you were not only a friend, but just a compassionate soul, but also a person who I had watched help other people give birth to their projects. And so there was just something in the craziness, and I was still really crazy and really foggy, but there was something that just told me, you need to reach out to Kristen when you're ready. And I didn't even know if I was ready, but one day I think I just picked up the phone and called you and I said, I think I'm ready to write about this. And we weren't even that close. And you picked up the phone and said, oh, hi, I've been waiting for the call. And that was the beginning. And I didn't know. And I didn't, and you never pushed me either. You said, great, come over next week and we start and we'll start. And I said, I don't know how to start. And you said, I do, just come on over. So I didn't start with a clear intention, which is probably the worst lesson. I know people listen to your beautiful podcast because you and Natalie are so great at showing people the way and giving people inspiration. And I think a lot of times it's very important to have a clear direction. I did not have that. I'm just being honest. I didn't know if I ever wanted to share this out loud. I didn't know what was next. I just felt like I wanted to start to tell a part of the story. I didn't even know which part. So that was the beginning.
And I think for so many of our listeners and so many people we've talked to, and certainly in my own life, and I know Kristen as well, oftentimes you have an idea or you have an instinct or an impulse and it feels so true in your body, but because you don't know the steps or you don't know where it's going or you can't see the finish line, you just assume that's not for me or there's no way I can do it. And so I think what was so beautiful about you is you were willing to just say, well, I don't know, but I'll show up in an apartment once a week for a while and just take that step without any expectation that it has to be even more than me sharing journal entries with a director and writer that I love.
Correct. And that's how I have felt and how other people have treated me all along the way. Like, if you need to stop, we'll stop. Like the next step after I wrote for a while with Kristen was a very gentle kick in the tushy from Kristen. Not even just saying, I think we're ready. We're ready to go out of the apartment and into a rehearsal room. We're not ready to go out of the apartment and onto the stage. We're ready to go and be in a room and see what this is. And I didn't want to go, but I just trusted you. And
do you remember we were sitting at this table?
Yes.
And I said, well, and to be clear, just to let people know, when you first came over, all we talked about is, what do you know you'd like to talk about? Like, what are the things that feel like they might want to be involved? And we just kind of started to put down in note cards what might want to be part of the show.
Right.
And you started to bring your journal entries and some text messages and some...
Yeah, text messages were really...
Yeah.
It's interesting because there were, you know, you think it's, okay, what did I write down? But in today's day and age, a lot of the things I wrote down maybe were later, but the text messages I sent to certain people were much more visceral and of the moment.
Yes.
They weren't, oh, this day happened and here's what I think about it. They were, this, I'm in pain, help.
Mm-hmm.
Or this is what just happened. So they helped me recreate the timeline and the feelings in some ways as much, if not more, than some of the journal entries, I think.
Yeah, and so by the end of a certain period, we had what was like a loose script. And that's what it was like, it's time to leave the apartment. And I remember saying to you, close your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you see us next? And the reason that I think that's really interesting is there's a place inside of us that knows. And when we get still and we get quiet and we release expectation, there's like a truth, an answer in our inner voice that communicates to us. And you said...
Well, I closed my eyes and it did just come to me. I said, New York Stage and Film, which is a place that I have worked with an artistic director who I trust and trusted and still trust. And it did. It just came to me. And like we've been saying, I've been doing this professionally since I was 14. And I was not 14 at that moment. And so there were lots of different places I could have said or people I could have said or locations. But it was very clear. It was, again, easy, weirdly easy. And you said, well, then reach out to New York Stage and Film. And I did. And Joanna, who's the artistic director, said, "Oh, okay, what do you need?" And I said, "Kristen says I need a rehearsal space. I don't need a theater. I don't want to perform it, I don't think. I don't know. Do you have a rehearsal space?" And I was thinking of the summer, because that's where I had worked there. They have a beautiful, incredible summer festival. And Joanna said, "Oh, well, we're doing a series of shorts, or a series of readings or something, in a couple of weeks at Barnard College." And Barnard is where I went to college. So right away it was like, oh, all right. And she said, "We have space for you there, I think." And I was like, oh gosh, I hope they don't really, because that's really soon. And I'm ready for the summer, but I'm not ready for a couple weeks. And then we got an email and she said, "Okay, here you go." And we did that week. And midway through that week, Joanna came to us and said, "You know, we have the theater for you, not just the rehearsal room, and you can use it if you'd like." And I said, yes, which I meant to say no, but yes just came out. And so I said, "But we can't invite anybody. We'll just do it in the theater." And then Kristen said, "Well, close your eyes, and who do you want to invite?" And that became really clear. And it was, I'd say, 12 of my very close friends, mostly women, and really, really close friends. And then Kristen said, "I'm going to invite just a couple of people." And one of those people was Natalie. Had I met you before that night?
That was the night I met you.
Oh, no, what an intense way. Night. Yeah. No wonder we love each other.
Yeah.
So, Natalie, what was that like for you to show up?
Well, it was so interesting because I remember the day Kristen said, "I just came out of yoga class, and I heard in yoga class, Maddie is going to write a show, and you're going to help her bring the show to life." And I was like, "Who's Maddie?"
And because she knew it was going to be a one-woman right. show. I didn't know that at the time. And I didn't know what it was going to be.
And, of course, I feel so codependent with Kristen that I'm like, why is there this woman in your life that I don't know about?
And I had heard all about you. So,
but it was so interesting. So from that soundbite to however long after it was that you had the instinct to then reach out to Kristen, I just felt like I was watching the divine at work. I just felt like it was really clear that all of this serendipity and in the flow was happening. And I love watching Kristen raise projects because one of Kristen's profound gifts, and I actually always say this was actually the gift in my life as well, that Kristen sort of raised me, is that I came into Kristen's life as a much smaller version of myself than I am now. And all Kristen really did was continue to see me and relate to me as the person she knew I really was. And there was something about that that allowed me the permission to ask myself different questions and grow into the person that I am today. And I continue growing. And so I've seen her do this with myself, and I've seen her do it with multiple projects. So when she said, "You know, I have this very great friend, Maddie, and I feel this instinct," almost in that moment, I was like, then I knew we were going to be here at this table doing this thing. So then it was just me getting to be an audience member to watch it unfold. But I do remember that night coming to the theater, and I remember that I was the only stranger to see you perform, because everyone else was someone that knew you and knew your story and knew your life. So I remember feeling this must be a vulnerable place for Maddie, that although she would trust that I'm Kristen's friend, this is the first person that's going to see your story who doesn't know your story. I didn't know your family. I didn't know your situation. I had heard of you as an actress, but I didn't know any of the circumstance. And I remember sitting in the theater absolutely gutted. I sat and I just felt the elevator inside of my heart keep dropping and dropping and dropping into such an immense authentic truth that as an audience member, I thought, I've never had this circumstance, but I know exactly this pain. And it's so universal that all I want to do is say, you guys are creating something so magic that you must keep going, because it doesn't have to do with the specific story you're telling. It has to do with the universal truth that you're tapping into the human spirit.
Well, you did say that. I remember meeting you, and it's a very weird night to meet someone. I was so nervous before saying these words out loud. I mean, I sat on a stage. I had a music stand, and I We didn't have lights or anything, so I could see the audience, and I remember seeing this beautiful young woman weeping. I mean, my friends were weeping and laughing, and that was actually encouraging. The laughter was just as encouraging, if not more so, than the tears, but seeing somebody who I didn't know have that reaction, and we did talk that night, and you told me a little bit what it brought up for you. I don't want to say your personal life.
Well, they all know.
but you were going through a lot in your life in that moment. And it was a very big moment, actually, for me as a playwright and as a person creating this thing, whatever. It was a night where I think Kristen already knew, but I know Kristen learned something, but I think she knew more than I did. That this story was not just about the salacious details, and it wasn't just my story, it was that it would touch other people. And the fact that you shared that you had felt a lot of the things that I expressed I was feeling during the most traumatic time, even though our circumstances were completely different, it really made me believe that I should keep going. And there were a couple of other people there that night that were my good friends, that are people that I really trust, who I believed would say, okay, you've done that. Now let's put it away. That was a great thing. You needed to get that out of your system. And now you can't ever do that again. And nobody said that.
Did you really think that was going to happen?
Yes.
Wow.
I did.
So after that, there's a few things we learned about the show.
Yeah.
I think we made a couple of maybe edits afterwards, not much. Like there was a couple things we knew we wanted to do after that version.
Well, it was just such a big, crazy night. Somebody said they wanted to produce it that
yeah,
night.
No, absolutely. And we said, let's wait. One of the things we learned is about how important it was to make things active.
Yes.
I remember that was our big learning. So we kind of went back into the script and there was so much that was active, so that those things that weren't active that became like explaining, we went back in and we said, okay, how do we activate this? How do
right.
we activate this? And
right.
it told us, like, we weren't ready for it to know that beforehand. But after that, we learned that.
And also you guys, I mean, you just like said this so briefly and went over it, but I think it's such an important thing. So many of us are so desperate to have our actions and what we put out then have some sort of reward or finish line. And the wisdom of saying, even though people were saying, okay, well, let's produce this, let's do this. The wisdom of saying the integrity and whatever this piece is more important than what I need to get out of the piece. So let's give the piece, let's give this baby what it needs. It's its own specific journey, its own timing, its own individual attention. And let us not, as creators, put our own agendas on top of it and let it reveal to us its own timeline and what it wants to be. That takes a lot of courage.
And I always feel that a project will tell you what the next step is. It might not tell you the whole thing, but it'll tell you the next step. So after it had told us what work it wanted to be done, we did that work. I think I turned to you again and said,
you did.
Close your eyes. What do you want? And you said,
I need some time and space to actually work on it, because it had been so helpful to have those boundaries, that space that was just for us, not just in your apartment, but we're showing up for rehearsal. We actually had a stage manager. We had office supplies, but we had a time for multiple days in a row where we were just working on it. And I have 3 kids and I was going on auditions and I have a husband and I was, I think during this time, moving, you know, there were all kinds of things happening. So to have, and I am an actress who has always been employed by someone else.
Mm.
So for me to take time to just work on something because I want to, and no one is officially paying me or telling me to go someplace, is very challenging for me. I don't allow myself that. And so I think what I said I needed was a week or more to just look at this quietly. And it's a very, very vulnerable personal piece. And it's not the kind of thing I really could work on in a coffee shop.
No.
And so we went back to New York Stage and Film and said, "Can I come there this summer?" And there was a pause where they didn't know. And it was the first time I always felt like, okay, close your eyes. Oh, look, it's happening. Oh, it's... And then there was a moment where they said, "We don't know." And I said, "Oh, well, I need this. I want it." And it was the first time I had said, "I want it." And we actually reached out at that time during that pause to Daryl Roth and said, "Can we use your theater to do a reading?" And we knew we would create our own workshop and reading. And then before we even got the answer back, New York Stage and Film came back with, "We're giving you a fellowship." And then you had something else to do. So we didn't know if it was just going to be me up there. And I never do this. I am way too nice. And I adore Kristen. But she said to me, "I don't think I can be there." And I said, "Are you sure? I think you need to be there." And she said, "Okay, give me a minute." And she looked at her schedule and did something crazy and flew in from Los Angeles where she was working. But I had a couple of days in the New York Stage and Film main area is at Vassar College up in Poughkeepsie. And I had, I don't know, I want to say 3 days before you and Natalie got there. And it was the most quiet time I have ever had in my life. Because I've always either been married or been part of a family or had children around, and I was up there working on a solo piece. I didn't have, and actually they offered me a stage manager to come into the room and I said no. So I just worked by myself. And it was exhausting and amazing, and I ate a lot of snacks and I gave myself a schedule. And then just as I was about to lose my mind, you and Natalie showed up and it was like, "We're here. Isn't this great? Aren't we living our best lives?" And I was spiraling down into despair, thinking I had nothing left to say and I didn't know if it worked and I didn't know what I was doing. And it all worked out. The timing worked out perfectly.
I mean, when I look back now, it all seems divine. But it was so great that when we asked New York Stage and Film for the summer fellowship, they were like, "We don't know if we have room." Yeah. And that made, I went to you and said, "So if that doesn't happen, what do you think is the next step? Close your eyes." And you say, "We asked Daryl Roth if we can do a reading at her theater." So we sent off that email. And then almost and then you were wise and you said, "I know that we're supposed to be in New York Stage and Film this summer. I'm going to ask one more time," which is very vulnerable for you. And you are not one that would naturally say, like, put your heart on the line and say, "This is what I really feel." And you sent this kind of impassioned email, and then they turned around and said yes. And it was an instant of someone following their inner gut and their inner vision. And then they said yes. And then shortly after that, Daryl Roth said yes. So now we had two milestones, two deadlines to look through. And you also told me, "Kristen, I need you there."
Yeah.
And so I did one of those crazy kamikaze things where I flew in on a red eye. And
remember, Kristen texted me, and I was on a plane coming back from Paris, and she said, "Maddie's doing this thing." And I said, "Okay, I'm coming." I was like, "I don't know if I'm invited, but I'm coming." And then we had this amazing, amazing
process. We took the train up together, right? And we had so much fun. We felt like we were in summer camp.
Yep.
You and I wore the cutest shorts and tank tops around with headbands.
We stayed together. Eyeliner. Yes. There was a lot of fabulousness coming onto the Vassar campus.
I mean,
and
we stayed together in a dorm room.
Yeah.
It was like the Kristen and Natalie college edition that everyone wants as a film but hasn't been made yet. It was amazing.
We had the best weekend together.
We had the best time. And working on a show that is, like you said, so deeply vulnerable, so deeply personal. What I valued is that the process that we all found together was so filled with joy and so filled with love and so filled with pastries and laughter and rolling around in the grass and being silly and creating a really special thing.
Yeah.
And that's when you got deeply involved in the process, because all of a sudden you were in the room with us.
And on the stage.
Here we are talking about the most vulnerable themes in life. And this show is so deeply spiritual and deeply human. And when I say spiritual, I mean of the human condition, right? Of the deepest things that matter. And So the three of us working together became this really magical threesome, for lack of a better word, but really it's the and then that Up at Vassar was the first time we ever did the show for people who didn't, who really didn't know you. It was 100 people. It was their subscriber base.
Yeah.
And we got
all ages, all races.
Yeah, exactly.
And circumstance.
What was that like for you?
Well, I think when you guys arrived, you reminded me of why I did have an intention at the beginning. I didn't know what it was going to look like. I didn't know how I was going to tell the story, but I did know why. And I did tell you that as I'm remembering my first day. We've actually cut the line from the show, but in my life, I know why I wanted to tell the story. Because somebody in my real, true life found me during this really, really lonely, scary time. And I didn't know her at all. And she found me through friends of friends. And she reached out and she told me her story. And it saved my life. I'm not being hyperbolic. It saved my life. And in the time between then and when I even showed up at your apartment that day, I had started to talk to other people. I had started to share my story in group therapy. Or my story was in the newspaper. That's part of what we should say. My husband was arrested for downloading child pornography. It was so shameful and so scandalous. And he's a director, so he had some acclaim. And I'm an actress, so I had some acclaim. So it was a sexy, scary story. So the New York Post and every place else was thrilled to run that story. And so my story was public. And so one of the reasons it's called Accidentally Brave is it's not so brave of me to share it because it was already out there. But what really helped me get off the floor was when other people told the truth and told me their stories. And I knew that I didn't just want to do a play and have people laugh and clap. I wanted to maybe help people by sharing my story. And this is the way I do it. I'm not really a person who writes novels. I'm not a person who is a therapist. This is what I do. I am a storyteller. On the stage. That's where I feel the most comfortable. So circling around to, I knew I was going to go on the stage and tell this really scary story that I felt like everybody knew, but I knew that some of these people didn't know. So what was I doing? And how am I going to do this? And why am I doing it? And Kristen and Natalie that day and many days since have reminded me because somebody needs to hear it. And no matter what happens next, today, somebody sitting out there needs to hear this.
I was going to say that one of the things I've always felt about this show is it talks to everyone who has been through a crisis, which is everyone. Everyone has had something blow up their life, whether it is bankruptcy, cancer, sex addiction, an arrest. Anything that has come into your life, some sort of unseen unemployment come in, something that has made you hit your knees because you're like, I don't know what to do, and I feel like my life is over.
And this isn't what it was supposed to look like.
Yes.
Yeah. That was, that for me, the powerful thing of, because I was really helping out really with just reading the stage directions for you and just being on stage with you to support the technical elements that weren't alive in the show yet at that stage of development. But what was amazing for me is because I'm on stage with you, I was watching the audience watch you. And so I got the profound experience of watching a 70-year-old couple who you think would potentially be appalled by this story or have no relationship to this type of story through the course of the show reach out and hold each other's hand. Mm-hmm. Or young gay couples, you know, reach out and put arms around each other. You know, like every person in the audience, you could see them through the course of you telling your story could relate to their own partners, their own friends, their own children, their own parents through a lens of compassion of, we've been through dark stuff too. And we're still here watching this show together. And it was so powerful to both feel like I was partners with you to make sure that you felt held and in partnership with what you were creating with Kristen, but also to watch that, again, the universal nature of this thing, that everybody understands what it's like to love someone so much and have profound hurt between the two of you.
Yeah, I did learn a lot that day. I don't remember that much. I mean, it was kind of an out-of-body experience. But I remember hearing the show is funny, weirdly, or not weirdly, but because something terrible happens or scary happens doesn't mean you stop being funny. But other people expect you to stop being funny. So when I got the first laugh or two early on, I kind of relaxed into it a little bit, and let go a little bit. And I did feel I'm a savvy enough performer that I could feel the audience being with me and not leaving. And I think that's another reason I really like telling the story. And you have to look at a human being, because when we just read about things, it's easy to say, well, that would never happen to me, and I would never do that or this or feel that or this. But if there's a human being, I'm you, you know, I'm not that different. And my husband's not that different. My husband is a person with an addiction, and I didn't know about it, but I had to learn about it. So I've had people's reaction after, both at Barnard and then when we did it at Vassar, was so amazing and heartening to me, because even though my experience felt at the time I was going through it like no one would ever understand, and I felt so lonely, that so many people have said, I get it, felt really rewarding. So that was another time where we felt like, okay, maybe we take another tiptoe forward.
And then we had that reading set up in October.
Right. We had to change the date, remember?
That's right. Because you booked a big movie.
Yes. And I almost said no to the movie. And Kristen said, Maddie, we're not, you can do your movie with Tom Hanks. We will change the date of the reading.
Yes. I love it. I was like, everyone will understand.
But also, again, the absolute integrity to checking in with yourself. What feels like my dharma? What feels like my purpose? What feels important? And it's not always going to be saying yes to the flashy, famousy thing.
I was ready to say no.
Yeah.
I really was. If Kristen couldn't have changed her date, I was ready to say no, which is also a very different, you know, you said Kristen helped you become your best version of you. I would say Kristen and a deep trauma helped me become a much stronger version of myself. And, I mean, I'm doing it now. We're in rehearsal. We have an actual production. And I still have people saying, oh, but you could come out and do this TV show. I know I'm supposed to do this, which has grown in me. And trust me, on March 10th, I'll be going, why am I doing this? Why can't I just be the third banana on a sitcom? That was so much easier, and I'd make so much more money. But like you said, it's really scary, but also really great to be doing something that might actually mean something. Well, that does mean something to me. It mm-hmm. might mean something to somebody else.
So we get to October. We
yes.
do this reading at the Dale Roth Theater.
Yes.
By this time, we've already had a couple people come to us and say, I'll produce it.
Yeah.
And you had always had an instinct in your heart of, I just want to show Daryl first. Before
yeah.
I say yes to anyone else, I want to show it to Daryl because I have an instinct that she will be the one to produce it.
Yeah.
And we do that reading in October, and because I love Maddie, most humble woman ever.
Yeah.
This invited audience of friends, and like everyone is so fancy famous.
I know. It was actually very distracting to be on stage because I was looking at like this room full of the most cool, famous people ever. And I'm like reading stage directions with like shaking hands.
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh, this is so famous and fancy.
I know, it was
like an opening night
yeah.
audience. It was
and
pretty groovy.
The show killed.
Yeah.
We did that reading and there was so much laughter and there were so many tears and no one wanted to leave afterwards. No one wanted to leave the lobby.
No.
It was such a fun night. And the next day you get a phone call from Daryl Roth.
Yes.
And she says,
she actually texted me that night, and I crazily said, let's talk tomorrow, because I was just so, and she said, of course. She said, I have some thoughts, And I said, oh, I can't wait to hear them. Can we talk tomorrow? And she said, of course. I mean, it was a big, exhausting night. And we also really put together, it was our people. You know, we didn't have somebody else do it for us. It was my people, our people. So I called her the next day, and she told me some of her thoughts. And she said, and where do you see the show happening? Which she said it like, it's happening, so where do you see it? Which was already kind of exciting. And I said, well, where do you see the show happening? And she said, I see it happening just where you did it yesterday, in my theater. I think it was the perfect space. It's like a hug, and that's what you need around you telling this story. And I am ready to produce it. And I said, okay. And really, that's how it happened. That was it. And then I said, okay, we'll, and she said, great, we'll talk about it in a couple days. Let Kristen know. And I called you and said, Daryl Roth's doing the play. And you said, oh, I know. Then we called Natalie. She said, yeah, I know.
So now here we are. We just finished our first week of rehearsals.
We're celebrating. We're having champagne while we do this podcast. Cheers.
Cheers.
Because today was officially the last day of our first week of rehearsal.
Oh, my gosh.
And we've staged 30 pages of the show in 1 week.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. You're crazy.
And I will
You're
say...
You're crazy.
I will say it's like such an interesting position to be in because I'm watching my very best friend in the world, Kristen Hange, who I have done everything with. Like, we travel together, we do create together, we do the podcast together, we teach together, we're best friends together. Like, we do everything together, but I've never had the opportunity to sit in the room and watch her direct. So yeah. I feel like it's like the most magical Christmas present in the world. And sometimes I get a little misty-eyed and I always bring dark chocolate to like try to like please her and be like, I'm so proud of you. And then on the other hand, like the actress in me is going crazy because I'm getting this masterclass watching Maddie Corman. I was saying this to Kristen. I'm so in awe. Kristen will say, okay, for the last 8 pages we did, here's my 8 pages worth of notes for you. Let's try it again. And Maddie will execute every single note with no resistance. It's like, even if you thought in your mind, like, well, I don't know if this note's like really feels congruent to me. It's like, I'm going to try it. Absolutely. Let's try it. Let's see. Let's audition it. Let's go for it. And the mastery of how open you are, even though this is your story and your piece, and you know this better than any of us from the outside looking in, and you're able to hold the integrity of that while still being so open and just such a freaking great actress. I literally feel like all week I've been high.
Yes. Yes. And I'm in awe of her. Like, the mastery of her technique is unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
And she's as good of, she's so such a wonderful comedian and then so emotionally open. And then the technique is
of
unbelievable.
Switching back and forth.
And says yes. Everything. Mm. Let me try it. And it's really, it's incredible. I think the reason we've gotten so much done this week is because of how open you are.
Well, I chose my director very well. I mean, really, seriously, I love getting good notes. And I know that this is a piece of art. This is not me in therapy. This is not me giving a TED Talk. This is a piece of theater that we created. And it wants to be told in a certain way. And, you know, I am going back to a period in time, but I'm also telling it from me now. So it is nice to try different things with it and see what works. And it is also bizarre and surreal. As I was saying to someone the other day, I can't exactly run lines at home and be like, can you take it from the top of I think you're a monster or I still love you, but I hate you. You know, these are not really things because, spoiler alert, I'm still with my husband and I love him very much. But this is something that I truly work on during the day with you guys. And then I go home and I'm not living that part, but I'm living with these people. So it's a very complicated, incredible, very spiritual, very deep process. And it's amazing to feel safe and held and also safe and held spiritually and personally, but also creatively. I mean, I have a great desire for this to be a very good piece of work. You know, I don't want it to be messy or sloppy. And it's an amazing thing to have been so solitary with the experience and then pretty solitary with the creation, because it was a lot of time just Kristen and me, or then just me. And now to have designers and an entire Daryl Roth's production team is phenomenal. And, you know, we have Natalie helping us, and we have people bringing us snacks, and we have projections that are coming up, and it's overwhelming and incredible. And I'm going, it's not crazy fast, but it's pretty fast. So I haven't had too much time to go, wait, what?
And what advice would you have for anyone listening who has something they want to create that feels deeply personal and maybe even really scary?
I highly recommend having your husband get arrested and having it in the paper. It's wonderful material. No, I don't wish that upon anyone. I recommend trusting yourself, but also reaching out to someone who you feel like could be a great guide to you. Someone who you feel like you can share the beginning with. And the thing is, all along the way, I was very resistant to show this to anyone except for Kristen. And now that many, many people have seen it and read it, I really trust myself when I get notes and I don't take them from everyone. As much as you say you're so open, I'm open to you. I believe you. I trust you. You are my director and collaborator. I have heard things from people a lot now because we've shared it with, we've done a few readings now. And so people have opinions. And even a very good friend of mine, and so I guess my advice to try to stay on point, my advice is listen, let people share what they want to share, but also listen to yourself. Because people have had great ideas, but usually when I hear any idea that goes against what's already written, I'm riddled with self-doubt. And I haven't felt that on this one. I have felt very clear about what is right and what isn't. And when I'm not clear, we're just going to try it. But for example, a very, very dear friend of mine who's actually a brilliant writer, she's going to kill me that I always bring up this story because she's like, great, you're going to talk about how you didn't take my note. But she came to that very first reading and she loved it. And she really was incredibly complimentary about my writing, which I was really so thrilled to hear that she felt like I was a good writer and that it has a point of view and it has structure. And she said, you know, there's a world where you can do a rewrite where you include almost like a Greek chorus, because in the play, I embody some other people. My children and some neighbors and a therapist or two. And she said, you know, there are plays which almost feel like a one-person play, but there's a couple of other actors who act as a Greek chorus and play these other parts. And I said, I heard it and I thought, absolutely not. And I love you, Gab. And you're such a great writer. And I just knew that part of this story, even though I love being on stage with other people, I love being in an ensemble. It is my favorite thing that I have done before now has been sharing the stage with masterful actors. It's just my happy place, bouncing that ball back and forth. But for this story, for this piece, I just knew that I have never felt more alone in my life. And there's something about being on the stage by myself that felt really important and right. So that goes back to, I guess my advice is, if you're telling a story, you know how to tell it. And if you don't have a Kristen in your life, just do it yourself. Close your eyes. Take a minute. And think about what comes next. Don't overthink it. Don't go too deep into your head. But listen to what you know.
Trust your inner wisdom.
Yeah, I didn't even know I had that.
And Maddie, so What are you the most excited about moving forward in this process? And what are you the most terrified about moving forward in this process?
I love you, Natalie, because your first question was, what are you the most excited about? And most other people are like, what are you the most scared about? I spoke to a dear friend of mine who is really my angel, the one who reached out to me, who was a total stranger and is now 3.5 years later, my sister. And I told her I was really scared about opening up a wound again for me and for my family and maybe shining light on something that has gone back into the corner. And, well, first of all, she and my husband said shining a light on things is what we do. Telling the truth is what we do. And that's the best spin, is to just tell the truth. Then you don't have to worry about anything. And I said, okay, but I'm still scared. And she said, I believe that you're scared, but I also believe that in my own life, I have discovered that excitement and terror have a very similar feeling in my body. And sometimes when I think I'm scared, I'm really just excited. So I'm trying. There are certain people, like you said, what's your advice? I know who to listen to. And there are certain people I could reach out to now who'd be like, I bet you're scared about this. And I'd go, oh, I hadn't even thought to be scared of that. Yes, I am. But I reached out to the person who's told me, maybe you're just excited. Yeah. So I'm scared of many, many things. I'm scared of people not liking me. I'm scared of people judging me. I'm scared of people judging my choices, and I'm scared of people judging people I love very much. And I'm excited about possibly giving some service and giving back some of what I have been given by the brave people who've chosen to share their stories with me. I'm excited to possibly give that gift to other people.
Maddie, thank you for showing up for you and for being accidentally brave. And what I have learned from you working on the show, and there are many times that Natalie and I talk about this all the time, where I quote your show to myself in my darkest moments. I will quote the show as a way of as a guiding light to help me navigate. And there is so much truth in your show. And I feel like working on the show is doing a process on me and helping me become more the woman I want to become. So
thank you.
That's
so great. Oh, my gosh.
I also want to tell our listeners that we would love if you would come to our previews.
Yay!
So it's so soon. Our first preview is March.
I lied. I'm scared about everything.
So our first preview is March 11th. And this is why this would be so of service to us, is we can still make changes to the show from March 11th to like March 24th. And so we would love if you could come when the show is still like clay and we're still working on it, because we need trusted people to be there so that we can ask questions, we can get feedback, we can hear your honest opinions. If you can't come in that time, just come anytime throughout the run.
Yes.
But we would love for you to be there with us. And we know that this show is part of our purpose, and we would love to share that with you as our community. We're going to put something on our Create Facebook page where there's a 20% discount.
That's good.
Yeah.
But if you forget that, just go on accidentallybrave.com.
Yeah. And if you had any inspiration or strength or hope from this podcast, or if you want to give Maddie some love, you can go onto Instagram and hashtag a brave play. A-B-R-A-V-E-P-L-A-Y. Or you can go right to Miss Maddie Corman herself at M-S Maddie, M-A-D-D-I-E, Corman, C-O-R-M-A-N, or our hashtag with the Create Play Group. And you can show us how you are being accidentally brave in your process, in your creativity, in getting through your day. And you can feel free to hashtag us and tag us so that we can support you and your brave journeys as well.
Maddie, what's it like to be brave?
Oh, I don't know. you know what? I say this all the time. I'm not a person who is... I wasn't born brave. I hate roller coasters. I don't like scary movies. But things happened in my life, and I just had to show up. And the bravest thing, I think, for me has been letting go of caring what other people think.
Mm.
So, yes, maybe it is brave to do this play, because I do know that telling the story might not please everyone, but if it helps one person, that's good. So I guess that is brave. Whatever I am these days, it feels better than what I used to be.
Love you so much.
I love you guys.
Oh, this is so much fun.
We had a good first week of work.
Oh, onward and upward. And thank you so much for the service you were to all of our listeners. And listeners, at A Brave Play, we can't wait to hear from you.
Yay.
Thank you so much for listening. We love to feel like we have friends all over the world in you who are committed to doing their dream on the planet.
And if you liked this podcast and you want to find out more about what we're doing or who we are, our pop-up classes, our online classes, you can check all of that out at thecreateseries.com.
And if you want to be part of our Facebook community, you can go to the Create Community page. That's C.R.E.A.T.E.Community.
And if you loved this podcast, why not share it with a friend?